Is there a desperate situation developing at Stormont when the chairperson of Sinn Féin, the national chairperson, Declan Kearney, has issued a plea to church leaders to help Sinn Féin and the other political parties prize money out of the British government? It begs the question once again, why did these parties leave themselves in a situation where they do not have enough money to implement the New Dawn New Deal agreement? Questions have been asked as to why they signed up to a deal without any figures, without any hard figures in Boris Johnson and the Secretary of State Julian Smith's deal. Did they have the wool pulled over their eyes? Will you decide this morning as you listen to Declan Kearney issue this desperate plea to church leaders for money? They're not asking the church leaders for money. They're asking the church leaders to help them put pressure on the British government. Declan Kearney was speaking on last week's Top Table programme, and here's what he said.
We do not have the funding in place to ensure that we can transform the society economically and socially.
So you walked into a deal, and you shouldn't have done then.
And what we are now doing is bringing as much pressure as possible with the British Treasury
to ensure
that the financial quantum required is in fact delivered.
What's your leverage? And, are you prepared to walk out again if you don't get the money?
It's been very important to note that the Labour movement here in this region in the north has come out very forcefully, very strongly to make the point that the British government have a financial obligation and a political responsibility to ensure that this power-sharing government has the resource that is required to continue transforming
Jim.
Our society. And what I would like, and what I would like to see are other civic pillars and other civic sectors. The leaders of the four main churches came out and made very robust statements during November and November about the absolute imperative of seeing the power-sharing institutions re-established. What we now need to see are our church leaders, our business organisations, our employers' organisations and other sections of civic society standing with the Labour movement in the north and all five parties who sit around the executive table to bring maximum pressure to bear on the British government. The era of austerity in the north needs to end.
OK, Declan, can I say this to you? And then Jim and then our other guests here. Can I say this to you? You in Sinn Féin have left yourselves in a situation. Surely this is true. Because you did the deal without the financial commitment, you're now having to politely ask the British government, please, sir, would you give us some money? Rather than standing firm and refusing to do that deal. Julian Smith needed that deal. He wanted the political parties across the line. You walked across the line and now you're having to say, please, sir.
Last week in London, last Tuesday, when I met with Julian Smith, Conor Murphy has met with him since, as has Michelle O'Neill, I said to Julian Smith that unless his government now meets their financial obligations to ensure that public services in the north of Ireland are underpinned, then they will recycle the same mistakes of the past and create a situation where the basis of good government and public services in the north of Ireland are undermined.
You walk out again?
British policy in the north of Ireland has rendered this region an economic and a political backwater. That's what began in 2010 with the arrival of the Tories in power. There is an absolute requirement for this British government, if the British government are serious about a new decade, new opportunities for all of the young people in this studio this evening, then the British government needs to end its austerian approach towards economic and social policy. They need to accept that they have obligations and responsibilities, and they need to get back to the table, deliver the Good Friday Agreement, and ensure that we've got the quantum to deliver sustainable public services.
That's Declan Kearney, part of what he said to the Top Table programme on BBC One last Wednesday night. We'll get your views on this morning. The state of affairs for Northern Irish politics, 0303 80 55 55. So there we have Declan asking for church leaders to help the political parties now prize this money out of the British government. But what would the English taxpayer make of all of this? Here's a flavour of what English callers to BBC Radio 4's Any Questions had to say about Northern Ireland, which I will remind you already gets more money per head than any other part of the UK.
Press and Brexit really drove home the $10 billion a year we pay to EU to be a club member. But nothing, it's becoming maybe more well known that Northern Ireland, 1.8 or 2 million people, take a similar amount of money to keep them in the union. And we've seen with the Ash for Cash scandal, it's not very well spent because two parties dominate completely and they almost fix it amongst themselves. I think that's a feeling. So if the popular press in England got hold of the fact that Northern Ireland was costing the English, and there I say it is the English, as or the southeast of England, so much money, then they might be certainly not too keen on keeping the union. And I think people in Northern Ireland feel that because it's dominated by those two parties, all they can do is stir up trouble all the time, and then the British Exchequer bungs them some more money.
Alex says the Tory party in the UK has exploited unionists in Northern Ireland not only to prop up an unpopular minority government, but also to staff departments implementing draconian welfare cutbacks, targeting the most vulnerable in our society. Michael Arnold says, so Northern Ireland gets more money than the rest of us because they couldn't, wouldn't, don't want to behave like the rest of the country and have been tearing themselves apart over religion and politics for years. How is this fair? They've been sulking for 3 years without an assembly, so what do they expect? Probably a lot more money to bail them out. It is disgraceful.
But I think Britain or England needs to threaten Northern Ireland with a bit more stick, really.
030 30 80 55 55. The deputy editor of the newsletter, Ben Laurie, with us this morning. Good morning to you, Ben.
Good morning.
So Sinn Féin find themselves in a situation where Declan Kearney is publicly pleading with church leaders to intervene to help get the money to implement the deal that they signed up to without any money in it.
Well, I think that the thing is that by trying to get church leaders involved, he's trying to give a moral authority to it. And there is at least an argument that church leaders shouldn't do that, because there's also a moral, there is a moral argument for more money. Of course, if you had endless money, it would be wonderful for hospitals and schools and everything. But there is also a moral argument, which isn't made very much in Northern Ireland, for fiscal responsibility. And we, in a whole range of things in Northern Ireland, for many years, it was one of the features of Stormont. It was one of the few things that Stormont could do and agree on, was the simple stuff, like giving free prescriptions to people like me. I'm a mild asthmatic. I could easily afford to pay for my prescriptions. I get them for free. Like lowering the age at which people get free transport. And in a time of rising life expectancy, where everything else is going up, instead of increasing the age gradually to 68, they lowered the age. And all of these things together, a lot of them don't cost very much on their own, but added together, they cost a lot of money. Now, Sinn Féin has an entirely legitimate view that it doesn't want Northern Ireland to exist. It wants there to be what it's now calling a New Ireland, an Irish unity. That's a totally legitimate goal. But it isn't good. There is at least an argument from the other side, people who do want Northern Ireland to exist, people who are unionist, people who think that the UK is a great thing to be part of. We can't keep alienating people like this. Listen to the clip that you did. During the negotiations on Brexit, lots of journalists were interviewed. I was one of them, by media, on two massive shows, radio shows. One of the first questions I was asked in a very short, quick interview, so will the DUP agree to this for another bung? That is the way a lot of people are beginning to think about Northern Ireland and the money that is pumped at us.
First call of the day, Wayne in Warren Point. Good morning to you, Wayne.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Go ahead.
Stephen, they'll not have to be able to prove they can actually manage money. Northern Ireland does get a lot of money, but yet again, they've been out of government for 3 years. Are they going to make serious decisions as a government and start leading by example on all parties? They haven't proven anything. I think England's at the stage now they're starting to get worried, is this a money pit?
What you're talking about is because of our reputation over things like RHI. If you had money, would you give it to Northern Ireland?
I would be in doubt, because to be honest, the opinion is they need to prove their worth in the census, because they make sensible decisions for both sides of the communities. Really sit down and make hard decisions that actually are going to benefit everybody. And let them see. Put it again, Stephen. Would they manage their own houses the way they manage our government? I don't think so. Or they'd all be homeless.
Northern Ireland Labour Party member Phil Kelly joining us this morning. Good morning to you, Phil.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Is this not deeply embarrassing in terms of a negotiating position, that after they've done the deal, they're now pleading with church leaders to intervene. What could church leaders do? Well, that the political parties, the senior leaders who we trust in this country to negotiate hard on our behalf, they haven't done it. So now they're asking what? Priests and ministers to get involved?
Well, absolutely. It's a mess. And, you know, I think you have to look at the parties that formed the executive and how they did. Now, there was a lot of commentators and a lot of public mood saying, you know, just get back into government, get back into government straight away. And I think in the wake of the general election, there was a knee-jerk reaction to get things done quickly. They've been bounced into a situation where they've placed their head in a fiscal headlock that will only get tighter and will only be squeezed more firmly over the coming year.
If that's true, why did they allow themselves to be bounced?
Well, indeed. And, you know, I would never have urged anyone to conclude a deal with Boris Johnson's government without having everything locked down, because the one thing that defines Boris Johnson, the way he treats deals and government and policy, is that it changes with the weather and nothing is secure at all. You cannot trust this man. Now, what I would say, there's two distinct problems in this whole story. Okay, so firstly, yes, the UK government has a responsibility stemming from the peace process and the Good Friday Agreement to secure peace here. And that was never, successive governments never done that. This place never got the peace dividend that it needed to really cement the peace process and move this place forward. That never happened, and we're still living with that legacy of stagnation. But what I will say, and where Ben is right, the mood in England should worry unionists in particular, because, you know, what happened with Brexit, when we come back to Brexit, is that the DUP and a lot of unionism mistook the rise of English nationalism for a new, confident British identity. It was no such thing. And what you have now, Stephen, is polls showing that the majority of Tory voters favour an independent Scotland, they favour Irish unity, and they actually favour a return to conflict in Northern Ireland over any compromise on Brexit. So you've got an English government which is much more aware of and much more focused on divisions with England rather than dealing with this place. And English voters increasingly saying they want their taxes spent in England, not in Northern Ireland. That's part of that rise of English nationalism and the desire to other people, you know, to turn their backs on the rest of the world and focus on little England. That creates huge problems for unionists because they've walked themselves over this cliff.
But I'm not being facetious, but what on earth, Ben Laurie, could church leaders do that Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill couldn't do? Like, where's Declan Kearney coming from? What could a church leader do?
I think the only thing that a church leader can do is give something moral authority, the point that I was making earlier. But beyond that, there's not a lot that they can do, because the church leaders were very clear. The church leaders are hugely respected across society. There's no question about that, even by people, most people who don't go to church. But as was very apparent on social issues like abortion and same-sex marriage, where the church leaders essentially spoke as one, their influence was limited. But I, this point about that Phil was saying, this is such an important point about English people losing patience with Northern Ireland. Again, remember that for Sinn Féin, not only is this not a problem, it's a pretty good thing. It's something that has been very apparent to me for a long time, for umpteen reasons. I'm often talking to people in Westminster and so on. Northern Ireland wasn't on the radar. It was always on the radar to a degree. And where I really don't agree with Phil about us not having had the peace dividend, on the contrary, England, Middle England, London, the Treasury, partly because they don't pay attention to Northern Ireland, pumped money at Northern Ireland. It was one of the ways that they tried to deal with the Troubles. They pumped money at the place. They've continued to pump money at the place. They've accepted, without a lot of question, successive governments, the duplication of in costs that comes from being a divided society, whether it's the nonsense of having a leisure centre and then another leisure centre nearby because it's catering to a different community, or whether it's schools, or whether it's special dispensation for particular types of schools, or whatever it might be. It has done all of these things, and it's now beginning to see what the DUP deal really showed them was the idea of billions being, or a billion, or whatever the exact figure was. You didn't need to be an accountant to get to the bottom of it. But what the average voter was able to understand, what these are very, very large amounts of money. And in this time, and English nationalism was unquestionably a big factor in Brexit. There were a lot of factors in Brexit, and it's understandable unionist went for it, but English nationalism was a big thing. At this time, above all, what anybody who does want Northern Ireland to survive should be thinking is how we're going to be fiscally responsible, responsible with our money, and show that we could, that we're not just going to have the begging bowl, as you put it.
The biggest problem and the biggest issue is that mainstream unionism is the biggest barrier to making economically viable Northern Ireland. So I have argued consistently that Irish unity is inevitable. But if a unionist want to follow a policy that can delay that and push that further into the future, they need to make Northern Ireland economically viable. With the situation here where both the Ulster Unionist Party and the Democratic Unionist Party stopped the kind of special status that a lot of people were looking at as a solution to a mitigation of the cost of Brexit to our economy, and they sidelined that. And what the DUP have done through their strategy is to ensure a hard Tory Brexit, which will be devastating to the economy here. You know, Declan Kearney spoke about an end of austerity. Austerity needs to end in Northern Ireland. Austerity will not end in Northern Ireland while we are linked to the United Kingdom with a Tory government who are saying that they want 5% departmental cuts across all government departments and who are slashing council spending in England.
So what do they...
They're very good
if we come
about
back,
having if we differences, Stephen, between rights, LGBT rights, women's reproductive rights in England, but they don't want to be different from the UK in other ways. But if you really want to be linked to England, then you're going to have to face the austerity consequences of being linked to that government.
Ben Lawrie, let me come back to the reality of this deal and lots of people wrapping optimism around it. And indeed, the Nolan Show has been getting some flack and some complaints over recent weeks. From the DNR that deal was announced, you know, it was getting very close to how dare we question it. Why aren't we part of the peace process? That is not the role of a journalist. So, let me ask you this. What do the likes of Sinn Féin and the DUP literally do if all of those promises made to the public within that deal, if the vast majority of them are undeliverable because the money isn't there? They're not going to walk back out of the Assembly again. So what do? Do they just hope the public forget about the list of promises?
Well, you could say that what Julian Smith and the government did was very clever, because I think my colleague Sam McBride described it like a shotgun wedding. Very significant pressure was put on, and as you say, it is not the role of journalists to go along with documents. I think it wasn't that big a document, it was dozens of pages, but a document that the ultimate implications of which takes a long time to understand. This was pushed through. As a random example, just before, well, there is money a factor in this, but even setting aside the money factor, how on earth did legacy appear in this? If it, apart from the rights and wrongs of
it
legacy,
appears, but it doesn't legacy, sort it. It just says the parties will...
If legacy isn't even agreed, then would it not have been sensible to say, well, this is something that we are not going to put in the, yeah, in the document? So there were all these undeliverable things, as you put it. But if you look at it completely pragmatically, if you are a ruthless government, and there's no question that in some respects this is a very ruthless government, a very different change of tone to Theresa May. Theresa May was really worried about Northern Ireland and really worried about upsetting Northern Ireland and destabilising. There's a very different tone to this government. What they did from a completely cynical point of view was logical, was to say, right, we are forcing this thing through, or you can face an election knowing that the DUP had gone down 5% in the general election, Sinn Féin had gone down 7%. Between the two parties, they went down 12%. From a clear majority of voters to, I think it was a minority of voters voting for the big two parties. The government saw that that was a weakness, and it forced this thing through. And in answer, that's a long-winded way of saying, in answer to your question, there isn't a huge amount those two parties can do, except now thinking about how responsibly and carefully to spend the still vast amounts of money, this is something I don't agree with Phil, on vast amounts of money that is being sent to Northern Ireland.
Commentator Andre Walker joining us this morning as well. And then, of course, you're English, Andre. The other perspective of, you know, why on earth, well, how much will people living anywhere in England tolerate Northern Ireland being thrown more and more and more money and being told we're a special case?
Well, I think that Northern Ireland is a special case, but I think you can't go completely over the top. I mean, if you remember at the time of the coalition, there was a lot of disquiet about the amount of money the DUP asked for. And I think the concern was not so much giving £1 billion for a few votes in the House of Commons, which is, you know, a little bit annoying. It's the fact that, you know, there's a fear that Northern Ireland just becomes addicted to this money. I mean, there has been issues, and we've discussed it on plenty of occasions, about governance in Northern Ireland, about whether local politicians are spending things wisely. So I think if the concern is that there needs to be assistance to start with as part of the peace process, and then going forward to economically develop Northern Ireland, that's fine. But if politicians simply think that all they want to do is just get the begging bowl out constantly and not fix their own problems.
But it's not a begging bowl. It's where is Julian Smith? He promised this programme an interview. I must text him later on. The bottom line is this. The Secretary of State looked the people of Northern Ireland in the eye and said, if your parties get back into government, this is what Northern Ireland will get. And it's in his deal, with his fingerprints all over it. So we're not begging for money. We're asking that the British government delivers on a promise that it gave us. Forget about the politicians. It gave us, the people of Northern Ireland. It promised that all of the things in that deal would be sorted.
No, it's not being sorted.
And our politicians were either trustworthy enough or stupid enough to believe them without the hard figures being on the document.
No, I'm not talking about begging bowl.
Don't start this about begging bowl.
No. Well, hang on. I'd stand by it, and I'll tell you why I stand by it.
Stand by it all you like.
I think it's right that any deal that's made with Northern Ireland needs to be honoured.
Well, it's not being honoured because the money's not there to pay for it.
Well, that's right. But the point I'm making is a more general point that, politicians in Northern Ireland far too often think that the solution to absolutely everything is to just demand more money.
I do want to get into general points this morning, because this is what is helpful to those people that actually want to have amnesia now, that we've just done one of the most important deals that Northern Ireland has had in recent times. So it's not about generalities. It's about the specifics in a deal which a Secretary of State flew into Northern Ireland and said, here's what's on offer. How the hell, Ben Laurie, is it on offer if he's not giving us the money to pay for it? It's not on offer.
Yeah, let me give you one example of where it can be paid for and where there is an emerging agreement within the parties. Is health reform. And in fact, health reform was something that Martin McGuinness in the final days of the previous assembly, and Michelle O'Neill, of course, was once a health minister, and all the parties seemed to be edging towards agreement on. That is something that, through political cowardice, was not tackled for a long time and is now clearly going to be tackled for umpteen reasons, including the fact that there's no alternative to tackling it. The savings on that are going to be vast. They're going to be vast. And it's not a savings, it's efficiencies, better spending of money and stuff. It's not just cuts. So there are a range of things that can be done in a range of different areas, but there's not going to be any return to a negotiating table now where this government is in for 5 years, end of. You can see how it's changed its approach to dealing with the EU. It's supremely confident, and I don't think that there's going to be a return in whatever happens to this government saying, actually, we got this wrong a few weeks ago, here's another few billion.
Okay. Ben and Andre and Phil Kelly, thank you very much indeed.